Sing, a little bit of quick background on them. Sandy is a music teacher at Jennings County High School, but she went through a period of time where her vocal cords, she lost kind of her voice and the ability to sing for about a four-year period. And it was during that time that she wasn't able to sing and do what she loves to do with the music. It was during that time that she kind of got together with Ron and had this idea that she was going to apply to be the youth director at First Christian Church in North Vernon, and Ron helped her to be able to do that for about a four-year period. And then she got her voice back, and long story short, you know, kind of through all that ministry and those things, you know, I feel like I'm kind of here today with you guys and feel so blessed to be here. And then with Hunter, on the other hand, Ron and I have talked several times. One of his memories of Hunter at First Christian Church, when Hunter was just a little boy, Hunter did not like to be in front of people. And, you know, we were those parents that made him be in the children's Christmas play. And that one morning he kept saying, "I don't want to go up there. I don't feel well." "Yeah, you're going up there. You're doing it." And Hunter proceeds to throw up all over the stage at First Christian Church and then swore he was never going up there again. And so through all that today, here they are up here singing and having a duet together. So thank you guys for that. I appreciate it. Phillips Brooks was burned out. He was known during his time period as one of the most dynamic and inspirational preachers of his day. In his mid-20s, he had become a pastor of a church called Holy Trinity Church in Philadelphia. And right away after he was named pastor, he went and got the help of a super salesperson by the name of Lewis Redner. And he got Lewis Redner to be his Sunday school superintendent, but also to be the organist for the church. Well, they started off with about 30 youth in that church, and within a year, they had 1,000 attending Sunday school, and that continued to grow over the next couple of years. Now, part of that was because of Phillips Brooks' dynamic preaching, and part of it was because of Lewis Redner's moving music. Things were going well, but then the Civil War came, and the mood of the church all of a sudden became somber. Women came weekly dressed in black, mourning the loss of their husbands and their sons. Darkness had fallen over about every facet of the worship service. And Brooks tried to be inspirational. He tried to keep them engaged. He did everything he could. But the point of the matter was, putting all that energy into it was draining him, and he was getting tired. Well, when the war ended, he thought the vitality and the joy would immediately be brought back to the church, but it didn't happen that way, because shortly after that, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. And although he wasn't President Lincoln's pastor, because he was such a great speaker, he was asked to preach the president's funeral. And he reached down deep and he found the words that he needed for that moment, and he put a lot into it, but at the end of it, he was just so burned out that he himself couldn't even rekindle his own spiritual flame. Phillips Brooks went to his church and he asked for a sabbatical. And during that sabbatical, he took a trip to the Holy Land. And while he was in the Holy Land on a Christmas Eve in Jerusalem, he and several others decided to get on horses and ride from Jerusalem into the tiny village of Bethlehem. And he recorded the story in his diary, and he talks about how it was a wonderful, life-changing experience for him. He said, "I had time to just be in prayer with the Lord. I had time to spend a lot of alone time with God. But while we were riding our horses," he said, "at dusk, when the stars were just getting ready to come out, is when they had started to enter into Bethlehem." And he rode into the tiny village of Bethlehem, and he said, "It was there that my whole spirit began to rise. And I was filled with something that to today still stands with me." This is all recorded in his diary. And he wrote in his diary this. He said, "Again and again, it seemed as if I could hear voices I know telling each other of the Savior's birth. Before dark, we rode out of town to the field where they say the shepherds saw the angel. As we passed, shepherds were still keeping watch over their flocks. Somewhere in those fields, we rode through where the shepherds must have been." Well, it grew increasingly dark, and Brooks rode his horse up on the hillside, and he tells about looking back at the flickering lights in that little village that evening. And obviously that created a wonderful stirring within him. And he later told friends that the experience left forever a singing in his soul. Well, a few weeks later, his sabbatical was over and he went back to the church, and he took this new vitality and his new level of energy, and he thought he could go back and just deliver that to the church and they would catch on, that renewed vigor. But when he tried to explain his experience to them, it just didn't click. I mean, I can relate it a little bit to when Sandy and I, when we were first married, we went to Hawaii. And I've always said, if you've been to Hawaii, you know how beautiful it is. And pictures just don't do it justice. I mean, you really have to see it. And I think that's kind of the experience he had. As he tried to tell his congregation, they just didn't see that same kind of experience that he had. So 3 years went by. And 3 years later, during the holiday season, he reflected on that trip that he had had to the Holy Land, and he decided that he wanted to write about that experience. And he decided to write about it, not in prose, but he wanted to put it into poetry form. And a poem easily came to his mind. And after he wrote it, he shared it with his music person, his organist, Louis Redner. And when the organist read it, "O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie," he somehow realized the power of the experience that Phillips Brooks had had in the Holy Land. And he immediately said, "I have to come up with a tune that will fit this poem." And he worked on it and he worked on it, and nothing really came that he thought fit. And he went to bed on that Christmas Eve night really upset with himself because he hadn't come up with a tune that he thought would work for the lyrics to that poem. And as he was lying in bed, a tune came to his mind. And he got up and he wiped the sleep from his eyes, and he quickly realized that the poem fit perfectly into the tune that was in his head. So as if directed by God himself, on Christmas morning of 1868, "O Little Town of Bethlehem" was complete. It quickly became a favorite around the Philadelphia area, and by the time Brooks died in 1893, it had already become one of the most popular Christmas carols in the world. The song of a dedicated Christian in search for his own spiritual renewal still speaks to us today. Let's look at that first verse. "O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. Above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yet in thy dark street shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight." God chose a little town in which the Savior was to be born. Bethlehem wasn't much. Bethlehem wasn't impressive. Bethlehem was just kind of a little suburb of Jerusalem. We're told that its population is estimated to have been around 150 people in Bethlehem. Now, I wanted to think about that. So I started looking up Bartholomew County, and I thought, well, what kind of a little town would that be? So I looked up Hope. Hope has 2,100 people from the last census in it. And I thought, well, what about Taylorsville? So I went to Taylorsville. Taylorsville has 919 people in Taylorsville. And I thought, well, and some of you live around where I do. I thought, Elizabethtown, Little E-Town, that'll be a good gauge, won't it? 504 people in Elizabethtown. I'm like, well, where do I go from here? So I thought, there you go out this direction, you go to Hartsville, right? Pretty small, 362 people in Hartsville. Clifford. Anybody around Clifford? You're too big. 233 people in Clifford. I finally settled in on Jonesville. Jonesville in the last census in 2010 had 177 people in Jonesville. Now, I'm guessing in Jonesville, everybody knows everybody else's business in Jonesville. Well, that's kind of how Bethlehem was, a population of 150 people. There were no important crossroads. There wasn't any big industry. There wasn't anything notable about their resources. Bethlehem was simply just a quiet little shepherding community that has been noted for two things. First of all, it was the birthplace of Israel's most famous earthly king, King David. And secondly, it was prophesied that it would be the birthplace to the coming Messiah who would inherit David's throne. That's pretty neat. But what I find even more impressive, and you just can't make things like this up, that 700 years before this time period we're talking about, 700, now, United States, our whole history is what, 240 years? 700 years prior, the prophet Micah wrote, "But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from the old, from ancient times." You see, the coming ruler would be born in Bethlehem, but he wouldn't be from Bethlehem. That wouldn't be his origin. His origin was to be from ancient times. The Messiah was going to be one that was from everlasting to everlasting. I think it's pretty neat if you think about how it all came to place, that one day God sent an angel, Gabriel, to Nazareth. Now, Nazareth is 75 miles north of Bethlehem. Okay? From Columbus to Louisville, internet says is 77 miles. So it's about from Columbus to Louisville that we're talking Nazareth to Bethlehem. Okay? So God sends this angel Gabriel to visit this woman named Mary in Nazareth and tells her, "You have been chosen to be the mother of the Messiah." Now, the Bible also indicates to us that angels kind of like to look into spiritual matters. They like to know what's going on and be on top of things. But I don't believe that even Gabriel at that point in time fully understood the mystery of God's redemptive plan and how all of that was going to unfold. I mean, I'm guessing that Gabriel was probably a little bit puzzled from the standpoint, like, you know, I know the story. I know the Messiah is going to come from Bethlehem. I'm going 75 miles north to this town in Nazareth and talk to this girl to tell her she's going to be the mother of the Messiah. I wonder how that piece of the puzzle is going to fit. How's all that going to happen? So Gabriel must have watched for, I don't know, he probably watched for 6, 7, 8 months. Like, how's this going to work? How's all this going to fit? How's it going to work out? Wondering why and when Joseph and Mary are somehow going to end up in Bethlehem. But they didn't. They remained in Nazareth. 8.5 months later, they're still in Nazareth. And probably at this point in time, Mary wasn't going to go anywhere in her condition. Especially Joseph saying, "Hey, get up, you're 8.5 months pregnant, but we're going to take this donkey and we're going to walk from Columbus to Louisville because we have to be in Bethlehem." But Luke writes in Luke 2:1, "In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world." Well, isn't that typical? You know, here's Caesar wanting to create and put a levy, put a new tax on that's going to generate revenue. Government likes to do that, right? Find a new stream of revenue for us. But I'm guessing Mary and Joseph weren't real happy about that. I'm guessing they're saying, "Really, Caesar? I'm 8.5 months pregnant here. You expect me to get on a donkey and go to 75 miles so that you can have this census, so that you can tax us more money?" I'm sure that they were exasperated by the inconvenience and the expense that was going to cost them. I'm sure they were thinking, why? How could Caesar be so insensitive? And you know what I find funny is that Caesar thought he was clever in raising taxes, but in the upper story, it was really God just using him to fulfill the prophecy of how it had to take place. If we pick it up in verse 3, chapter 2 of Luke, it reads, "And everyone went to his own town to register. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, to the town of David, because he belonged to the house and line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child." This is about the time that I think Gabriel's probably going, "Aha, now I get, boy, God, you're pretty on top of it, aren't you? You probably got this all figured out. Your wisdom and foreknowledge is just amazing. While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn." I also think it's pretty neat that a town the size of Jonesville would have an inn for the people to stay. But there's an old saying that says this: big doors turn on small hinges. And to me, it's amazing in this story and all throughout the Bible how God chooses little places and small towns to do big things. There's a famous cartoon that used to be printed every year in the newspapers about the time of Abraham Lincoln's birthday. And that cartoon would show two farmers from Kentucky talking to each other over this fence on their property. And the first farmer says to the second one, "Anything new happening?" Second farmer says, "Nah, nothing new." "Oh, they say Nancy Lincoln gave birth to a baby boy last night in her cabin, but that's about all I know of. Nothing really important ever happens around here." Whoever would have guessed that one of our country's most respected and most loved presidents would be born in Hodgenville, Kentucky? But you, Bethlehem Ephratah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel.